Testing in the House Chamber, Legislative Day 132.
Members, pursuant to the process that we announced earlier, we wait and do the prayer and the Pledge of Allegiance this afternoon when we come back in. Members should anticipate today that there, of course, the redistricting committee, I believe, is meeting this morning on the House maps. Those, of course, will be taken up this afternoon when we come back at 2 o'clock. The plan is that there may also be a number of conference reports added to today's calendar. There are a number of things that have been in discussion and in negotiation between the House and the Senate that may or may not get resolved today. And if they are, members should anticipate to see that. I also do want to let members know that the House is going to pass a technical corrections bill. There is no agreement as to what the other chamber will do with it at this point, but I feel it incumbent on our duty on this body that we address a number of technical corrections, and so I would submit to you they're really technical. There's a number of things. I know a number of members have had some questions about that, and so this announcement is for, because I know there's folks who are not just here who are listening, if there are truly, truly technical changes, which doesn't mean like adding money or moving money, but technical changes. An example is the money was supposed to go to Duplin County, for example, and it was to Wake County or whatever, something like that. Representative Setzer would say everything should go to Catawba County, but not exactly technical. Good suggestion, sir, but not exactly technical. Those kinds of things. So we'd ask members if there are truly technical changes like that to make sure that our office knows that ASAP. We're going to try to do that today so that we can get it to the Senate for the Senate hopefully to act on. But again, those are a few things we're going to try to get done. You know, members can already see the two bills that are already on the calendar, so there will be other bills today. We will not be voting on bills until 2 o'clock this afternoon, and so we'll be taking those bills up at that time. But members should stay and pay attention to committee announcements and also just keep an eye on conference reports. What we'll do, Mr. Clerk, if we get conference reports in during the interim while we're on recess, we direct the clerk to go ahead and read those in and go ahead and put those on the calendar, and that way members can know. Do we have any notices or announcements before I put the House in recess? Anything from the clerk? And I appreciate this suggestion from the clerk. What we will do as well is, clerk's going to be directed to issue a supplemental calendar by anything we received at 1:30 today. Go ahead and put that into place, and then we'll have that. But members should also anticipate that we may add to that. It does appear that we can take care of our business today and tomorrow. Thursday's kind of a backup day in case we need it, but I don't believe that we're going to need to be here an extra day. I think we'll be able to dispose of our business today and tomorrow. That would be the order of business this time. Any notices or announcements for any members of the body? I see we have some guests in the gallery. I want to welcome you guys. I see you there with Representative Zinger. Thanks for being with us today. If you're wondering where everybody is, they're in committees and so forth. This is what's called an administrative session. If you're back here at 2 o'clock today, you'll probably see a lot more full seats, I would anticipate, and probably a lot more folks in the gallery because we'll be taking up some official business. We hope you have a great visit, and be sure to make Representative Zinger buy you lunch wherever you want to go. Thanks for being with us. Anything from the body? Seeing nothing further to come for the body, the chair is going to declare that the House will stand in recess subject to the standard stipulation set forth in Rule 15.1 as well as modifications to the calendar until 2 o'clock this afternoon.
Hall is recognized to send forth a rules calendar and operations of the House Committee Report, House Bill 898, House Redistricting Plan 2023, H 898, addition 2, favorable, House 892 of the calendar pursuant to Rule 36B.
will take their seats. Visitors will retire from the chamber. The sergeant-at-arms will lock the doors. We'd ask our members and guests to please silence any electronic devices. Today's prayer will be offered by Representative Majeed. We'd ask our members, as well as our guests on the floor in the gallery, to please stand for the prayer and remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance thereafter. Representative Majeed. Good afternoon, sir.
Peace, everyone. Let's pray. With God's name, the merciful benefactor, the merciful redeemer. All praise is due to God, Lord of all systems of knowledge. Merciful benefactor, merciful redeemer, master of the day of judgment. You alone do we worship, and you alone do we seek for assistance. Show us the straight way, the way of those on whom you have bestowed your grace. Those whose portion is not wrath, nor those who go astray. O Lord, we cannot manage this life ourselves without you. Please make of our lives what you want it to be, what you prefer it to be. Do not allow us to act on our own. Help us to act only in obedience to you, God. We hear and we obey. Forgive us. We are asking for your forgiveness. Amen.
Gentleman from Caldwell, Representative Hall, recognized for motion.
Mr. Speaker, the journal for October 23rd has been examined and found to be correct. I move that it be approved as written.
Representative Hall moves the journal for October 23rd be approved as written. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. And the journal is approved as written. Messages from the Senate. Corporal Reed.
Special message from the Senate. The following special message is received from the Senate. Senate Bill 757, Committee Substitute, Second Edition, a bill to be entitled an act to realign the North Carolina congressional districts.
Redistricting, if favorable, counter. Actually, secondary referral on that would be rules. So redistricting, favorable rules, and counter. Members, before we undertake our business, we're honored today to have some honorary pages with us today. We first of all have Parker and Ian Collins of Yadkin County who are here with us. Parker, Ian, where are you all? Thanks for being with us. Glad to have you here. And they are from Yadkin County. And we also have Wiley and Daniel Tower of Craven County here as pages. So two sharp-dressed young men as well. Thank you for being our honorary pages today. And I think all the pages' parents are with us, either in the gallery or around. Thank you all for bringing these young men to be pages with us today and for their service. We hope you have an enjoyable experience. Chair is going to recognize, before we undertake the business, the lady from Waite, Representative Cervania, is recognized to send forth a representative statement. That'll be read in its entirety upon adjournment, but the lady does have the floor to speak to a point of personal privilege this time.
Thank you, Speaker. Today we are honoring a memory and legacy of Dr. Godofredo Nang. Dr. Nang, officially known as Fred, was born in Boac, Marinduque, Philippines in 1937 and died in Raleigh this year. He served as the in-house surgeon at Wake Memorial Hospital, now known as Wake Med, until 1969, where he started his own practice and later founded the Wake Surgical Center in 1974. And he also served as staff for Raleigh Community, now Duke Raleigh, Wake Med, and Rex Hospitals. As someone who's served our community through health and medicine, I deeply admire Dr. Nong. Dr. Nong understood life science and as human-centered. Conditions of the human body require human connection, empathy, and mutual trust. He sought to address not just the current physical ailments of people and his patients, but the overall health and well-being of every individual and the systems that they live under. That is what separated Dr. Nong from the sole title of surgeon. He also is a medical leader, a pioneer, a humanitarian, and a champion in the Filipino community, the community I belong to. Proudly. Dr. Nong was also instrumental in organizing the Filipino community in North Carolina to create the premier, the identified Philippine American organization, and which is the precursor of the current Filipino American Association of North Carolina, which continues to be an active and influential organization. And in the early years, Dr. Nong and his wife, Anita, who's honoring her presence here today, hosted the community in their own home and backyard. And a lot of the minority communities here in North Carolina, that's how it starts. Starts with maybe five people in a backyard, to now it's thousands and thousands of people who have been influential in really building North Carolina. And it is clear to everyone, at least in our community, and hopefully more now, that Dr. Nong truly cared for his community in all aspects, be it medical, personal, and social. He's a key figure, actually, in recruiting many of the Filipino nurses you probably notice when you go to the hospital and during some of our essential worker time in the past few years. And healthcare workers in all areas of North Carolina. He was a philanthropist, and he sponsored many causes, including education, medical access, leadership, and advancements in not only the Filipino community, but in all our communities, be it urban and rural. And until his death, he was an active member in our community, in all communities in North Carolina. So I want to end by remembering his selfless devotion to the treatment of others and services to the Filipino and North Carolina community. And his legacy will inspire future generations of healthcare professionals and just people, community leaders, and people who care about every single one of us here in North Carolina for many years to come. I do want to, I don't know if speaker will be recognizing them, but yes, sir. Thank you.
Members, the on motion of Representative Savannah, the chair, is honored and happy to extend the courtesies of the gallery to the Nong family who are here with us today. If y'all would please stand when we call your name. We have with us today Anita Nong, Matthew Nong, Cindy Nong, and Cheryl Nong O'Malley. Thank you for being here with us today. We're honored with your presence. Appreciate you very much. Calendar, Senate Bill 68, Cargo Reed.
Conference Report, Senate Bill 68, a bill to be entitled Various Local Changes the General Assembly of North Carolina Enacts.
Gentleman from Randolph, Representative Biggs, recognized for motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We wish to concur with Conference Committee Report, Senate Bill 68.
The gentleman's moved for adoption of the Conference Report, Senate Bill 68. The gentleman desire further discussion or debate? Seeing none, question for the House. Is the passage of Senate Bill 68 on second reading? Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Clerk, open the vote. Hall and Bell, would the gentleman like to vote? Mr. Clerk, please show Representative Jones of Columbus excused. Representative Budd wished to vote. Representative Hawkins. Is Representative Reeves? Looks like he's not on the floor. Are they just off of the floor? Be glad to wait on them if they're just off the floor. Budd, aye. With Hawkins or Reeves out there, Representative Budd, were that where you were? Clerk Lock Machine, record the vote. 100 having voted in the affirmative and 6 in the negative. Senate Bill 68 passed. The second reading will remain on the calendar. Senate Bill 154, the clerk will read.
Senate Bill 154, conference report. A bill to be entitled Omnibus Occupancy Tax Changes, General Assembly of North Carolina Acts.
Gentleman from Alamance, Representative Ross, recognized for motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, this is the identical language that we've all seen when this bill came through. These are various occupancy tax changes for about 25 municipalities around the state. The only change in this language and what we had before was the addition of Alamance County into the mix. I ask for your concurrence.
Further discussion debate? If not, the question for the House, passage of Senate Bill 154 on second reading on the adoption of the conference report. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Clerk will open the vote. Representative Reeves still off the floor. Clerk Lock Machine record the vote. 100 having voted in the affirmative, 6 in the negative. Senate Bill 154, conference report, passed the second reading, remains on the calendar. Members are going to move to the supplemental calendar. House Bill 898, clerk will read.
Representatives D. Hall, Stevens, and Sain. House Bill 898, a bill to be entitled an act to realign the North Carolina House of Representatives districts, the General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
Gentleman from Caldwell, Representative Hall, is recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, as I've mentioned in the committees where this map has been presented, the House hired Ohio-based consultant Blake Springetti to draw the State House map. He previously worked for the Ohio legislature, and he's got prior experience redistricting in the state of Ohio. Racial data was not used in the creation of this plan. No members who are running for re-election to the North Carolina House are double-bunked. Incumbency was not considered for those members who have announced that they are either retiring from the House or running for another office. Overall, the map, nearly 90% of all municipalities that are located within a county are kept whole under this plan, and many of the remaining municipal splits are due to precinct lines or involve small portions of municipal territory, often due to satellite annexation. The plan splits only 6 VTDs across the entire map, which is fewer VTD splits than we have in the current 2022 House plan. Overall, the overarching goal in construction of the House plan was to create Republican-leaning districts where possible while avoiding double-bunking incumbent House members and following traditional redistricting principles. Also, I'll note at the conclusion of last week's House Redistricting Committee hearing, we instructed central staff to produce and post to the General Assembly website the stat pack with racial data for the State House plan. After doing that and after careful study and consideration, we've been presented with no evidence satisfying any of the jingles factors to make us change course. Those factors are evidence of any location in the state where both legally significant racially polarized voting occurs and where a compact minority population large enough to be a majority in a single member district are present. This isn't surprising, of course. The absence of this evidence is consistent with many expert reports in past litigation in the state, including in the 2021 cycle, and past conclusions made by courts, including the Supreme Court. Under the circumstances of this case, then, the General Assembly cannot use race to draw districts to achieve a racial target because it would, as we've noted last week, subject the state to liability under the 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution. To be clear, the chair did not believe, any of the chairs of the committee actually who were working on the map, did not believe that the use of racial data would be appropriate in reaching any political or other legislative redistricting goal. As I've stated, We use partisan considerations in balance with other traditional redistricting principles. So members, we've heard a lot through committee and in the press about gerrymandering and how many of my friends on the other side argue that they may not be competitive in the districts, many of the districts that you've seen draw before you, and again due to alleged gerrymandering. And that argument, it goes something like Republicans and Democrats should have roughly the same amount of seats in the House of Representatives because our statewide races are often split on roughly a 50-50 basis. The problem with that argument, as you know, we're not a European system of government with proportional representation. If that were the case, if you look back at the 2020 gubernatorial election, the Libertarian Party got 1% of the vote. So that would mean we would have to try to figure out a district somewhere in the state to elect a Libertarian member. Also, you know, in thinking about whether this map is quote-unquote gerrymandered or worse than a prior map, context is important. And I would submit to you that our state constitution has a provision in it that actually functions as the most effective anti-gerrymandering provision in the entire country. And that's the whole county provision of our state constitution. It says that no county shall be divided in the formation of a Senate or representative district. This provision in our constitution was largely ignored for some time, up until the early 2000s when the state Supreme Court in a case called Stevenson said that we had to honor what the constitution says about whole counties to the extent we possibly can under federal law. And so the net result of that was they said you had to have these groupings. If you've served on the redistricting committee at all, you're familiar with groupings or clusters or pods. People refer to them in different terms, but the simple explanation is if in the House here, if you have a county that has the right amount of people in it, plus or minus 5% of the best population for a state house district, that county has to be one district. For example, in the state house right now, among others, maybe you've got Lincoln County with Representative Sane, Representative Pirtle, and Rockingham. Both of those counties have the right amount of people in them, so the law literally prohibits us from drawing a house district outside of those counties. And so that brings me to the map that I asked that be passed out today that is entitled Sutton House Plan 3, because context is important when we're talking about, we're throwing around words like the most gerrymandered map of all time, the extreme partisan gerrymandering that we've seen in past cases, past court cases that we've seen now thrown around in the media, and I always find it interesting that one year it is the most gerrymandered map that could possibly exist, and then another map comes along later on, and according to some folks in academia and in the press, the map that was the most gerrymandered of all time has now, we've eclipsed that one, and there's a new one that's of all time. But what's often forgotten is this whole county provision and the way that it changed the way we draw districts in North Carolina. If you simply look at the Sutton House Plan 3, this was the map that was drawn around 2000 before the Stevenson case was decided. At that time, there was no requirement at all to keep counties whole. There were no groupings. So if you had a county that had the right amount of people, it didn't really matter. You didn't have to draw a district there. And as you look at this map, for example, when you look at eastern North Carolina, it's truly the prototypical Rorschach test. It doesn't seem to make any sense at all about where these lines go. You look at Wake County, you look at Mecklenburg, and some of the strange lines that grow across the state in this map. And then when you compare that to the map that you see before you today, you don't have to be an expert on redistricting. You don't have to be an academic or an expert witness or even a legislator to know there's something different between these two maps. The one before you today is obviously much more compact. It obviously tries to keep political subdivisions closer together than the one back in the 2000, the Sutton House Plan 3, that was ultimately found to be unconstitutional. And that's important because, again, when we're talking about whether something is gerrymandered or fair or not fair, we're talking about other ways to do this, we need to remember that in this state we have, and I don't think it's arguable, we have one of the most effective anti-gerrymandering provisions in the country in our state constitution, in the whole county doctrine. In addition to the issues of the whole county doctrine and the way map drawing has changed since that time, there's been a longer-term shift ongoing in this state politically. And to put it simply, my colleagues on the other side, at least your party, and anything I say today is not against you personally, but as to the Democratic Party itself, they're no longer competitive. In many parts, in fact, an overwhelming majority of counties across our state. I'm going to give you a few salient statistics that support that argument. If you go back to 1992, Democrat Jim Hunt, he won 69 of the 100 counties in North Carolina. If you go back, if you fast forward to 2020, Governor Cooper, he won only 29 of 100 counties in the governor's race. As recently as 2008, Governor Bev Perdue won 60 of 100 counties. But since 2012, no Democratic candidate has won even 30 of the 100 counties in a gubernatorial election. Those numbers just simply illustrate the fact that Democratic candidates have become non-competitive in an overwhelming majority of our state's counties. So Democrats are essentially competing in a maximum of 30 counties statewide. And while that may be an excellent strategy if you're trying to win a statewide election, it doesn't work when you're trying to win majorities to this body when we're elected in districts across the state. And so, members, the electoral numbers, they don't lie. This map, certainly relative to other maps drawn before, is not gerrymandering. It simply reflects the unique political geography of North Carolina. And I know that it's easy sometimes to blame gerrymandering, quote-unquote, for the Democratic Party's woes in North Carolina. The numbers tell the story. The Democratic Party does not compete for voters in almost three-quarters of North Carolina's counties. So, members, I'm glad to stand for questions about various portions of the map. I know that there are a number of amendments that are to be taken up, and we will get to those. We have complied with the law in every way on these maps, and I would ask for your green vote.
Further discussion or debate? I know we're going to hear some. At this point, we will start taking up amendments. Representative Harrison. 41. New territory. Representative Harrison is recognized to send forth amendment ACL-41V2. Representative Harrison, you're recognized to explain your amendment.
Mr. Speaker.
Pardon me. Clerk needs to read.
Representative Harrison moves to amend the bill.
Representative Harrison, you're recognized to explain your amendment.
Mr. Speaker, I'm having trouble with my computer. Could you call on another amendment offer, please?
Certainly. That Representative Harrison's amendment will be temporarily displaced. The clerk will read the Reeves Amendment, ATU-42-V2.
Representative Reeves moves to amend the bill.
Representative Reeves, you're recognized to explain your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I do not have that in front of me. I'm assuming that's the Wake County Amendment. Yes. All right. And without going through a lot of discussion, because you'll get to hear a lot from me today, I will just say that the Wake County Amendment does not change the partisan makeup, has not violated any of the rules or terms that we have set for redistricting, and is at the request of the folks affected in the Wake delegation. They completely agree, and I would ask for your green vote, and I believe the rules chair would agree.
Representative Hall is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, Representative Reeves is correct. I would ask you to support this amendment. It changes the district numbers in Wake County to, I think, more accurately reflect current members' district numbers. So please vote yes for the amendment.
Members of the House, you've heard the motion on the floor by Representative Reeves. All in favor, vote aye. All opposed, vote no. The clerk will open the vote. The clerk will rock. Oh, excuse me. Speaker Moore votes aye. The clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. The amendment having prevailed 106-0, the amendment is adopted. Representative Stevens is recognized to send forth an amendment. The clerk will read.
Representative Stevens, move to amend the bill.
Representative Stevens, you're recognized to explain your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members of the House, this was not drawn by Mr. Spinghetti, the expert, but we received feedback from some elected officials in Buncombe County that the House plan as filed would have split Warren Wilson College. Some of you may recall that in prior maps, the campus of Warren Wilson College was also split, which was created considerable difficulty in election administration. As such, we drafted this amendment, which simply swaps two precincts in Buncombe County with the goal of keeping Warren Wilson College campus whole. We use no racial data in constructing the amendment. We know of no Voting Rights Act or constitutional issues with these amendments, and to our knowledge, there is no opposition from the members of the affected district to this change. I would ask for your support for this amendment.
Representative Prather, you're recognized to speak on the amendment.
Thank you. Yeah, we didn't know this was coming, but this is fine.
Representative Hall, you're recognized to speak on the amendment.
Members, please support the amendment.
Ladies and gentlemen of the House, you've heard the amendment. All in favor say aye. All opposed, no. The clerk will open the vote. Speaker votes aye. The clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 105 in the affirmative and none in the negative. The amendment is adopted. Representative Harrison, have your technical difficulties been resolved?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Are you ready at this
yes,
time?
Yes, sir.
Amendment number one is back before the body. Representative Harrison, you are recognized.
Thank you. We heard a bit about the Voting Rights Act and racially polarized voting, but I'm going to offer a different perspective. So just for a little bit of edification for the chamber, at the risk of boring some of you who are aware of this, ladies and gentlemen, and the North Carolina Supreme Court in Stevenson said that to ensure compliance with federal law, legislative districts required by the Voting Rights Act shall be formed prior to the creating of Voting Rights Act non-Voting Rights Act districts. That's consistent with the Supremacy Clause of the United States Constitution. So simply put, this means when drawing maps, North Carolina must first satisfy the legal requirement of the Voting Rights Act. So, and recent, and as well as longstanding U.S. Supreme Court decisions, including Milligan that was decided this June, Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, it reiterated that Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act requires that map drawers must rely on consideration of racial data to avoid unlawful racial vote dilution. When drawing the maps in 898, as you've heard, the Republican leadership has said that they directed Spinghetti not to include racial data in the drawing of the map, which makes it impossible to comply with the Voting Rights Act. So Representative Hall also said that that they made the public access to racial data available, but there wasn't very much time to perform such a racially polarized voting analysis and to take remedial steps to comply with the Voting Rights Act. Subsequent to that, on Sunday, October 22nd, many of us received a letter from the Southern Coalition for Social Justice, which performed a racially polarized voting analysis in northeastern North Carolina. And I think many of us are very confident that there is racially polarized voting in parts of North Carolina. Well, with the assumption that there is racially polarized voting, then the question is whether minority groups in question is significantly large and geographically compact enough to constitute a district where they have the opportunity to elect the candidate of their choice. And if you can draw such a district, the Voting Rights Act, Stevenson, and Milligan all say you must do so. And so we know in Milligan, the three judge panel found that clear evidence of racially polarized voting and that the state legislators reasonably could have drawn a congressional district where minority voters could have the opportunity to elect the candidate of their choice. The court also found that Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act required the drawing of the district, and the Supreme Court upheld the three judge panel. We have very similar facts here in eastern North Carolina. There is racially polarized voting. We can draw reasonable districts to provide minority voters with opportunities to elect the candidates of their choice. And to know for sure, you need to have done a racially polarized voting study that didn't just look at the state as a whole, but looked at the specific areas of the state. Referencing Representative Hall's point that there have been these studies, I think the most recent one was done in the 2021 redraw. And Dr. Lewis, who performed that analysis, he characterized his own analysis as abbreviated and was not the type of analysis he normally would have done because of the highly expedited timeline. He did not make any finding as to whether there exists legally significant racially polarized voting in North Carolina or any specific region. He admitted that under oath, he admitted all that under oath, and instead he concluded that the draft maps provided proportional representation of effective black districts, which is not a VRA district. Dr. Lewis never performed a Jingles 1 analysis for areas of the state with high VPP, BVP, black voting age population. And neither did his study obviously include the 2022 election data now available, so not only is his not really the type of racially polarized voting analysis we need, it isn't up to date. So we don't have that now, but we do have a racially polarized voting analysis performed by an expert whose name I can't find, but I can provide, that specifically found racially polarized voting. And this amendment is going to offer three new districts that provide racially that would comply with the VRA. And these are counties are impacted. I will list, but three of them here are in the similar analysis done on the Senate districts. That includes Hertford, where the black voting age population in the Beasley race voted 95.8% for Beasley, 4.2% for Budd. I'm sorry, that's Lenore. And the white population was 11.6 for Beasley, 88.4 for Budd. In Hertford, we had 93.3% for Beasley, 6.7% for Budd, 18.2% for Beasley, 88.8% for Budd. And then in Wilson, we had white, 18.2% for Beasley, 81.8% for Budd. And in the black population, it was 96% for Beasley and 4% for Budd. So pretty clearly, these are voting as a block. So I will explain what the amendment does. Sorry for about all of that background, but I think it's really important for us to understand to comply with the Voting Rights Act and to avoid another constitutional challenge to our maps, which has cost us taxpayers $15 million so far in redistricting litigation. So we have racially polarized voting. Can you draw reasonably configured districts that give minority voters the opportunity to elect the candidate of their choice? So House Bill 898 has two. House District 27, represented by the esteemed Michael Ray, Northampton, Halifax, and Warren counties, and then House District 23, which is represented by equally esteemed Representative Willingham, Edgecombe, Martin, and Bertie. And so the amendment before you creates three additional VRA districts, House District 24 in Wilson and Nash, House District 5 in Bertie, Hertford, Gates, and Pasadena counties, and then House District 12 in Wayne, Lenore, and Greene counties. And House District 23 is tweaked a bit to remove Bertie County and replace it with Washington and Tyrrell. In the amendment, the rest of the state is unchanged from the 2022 map that we all ran on to get here. There are no double bunks. There are 56 municipal splits versus 61. It scores higher on the compactness score. And there are, while there are more counties split in this amendment than are split in 898, we do have those other countervailing measures that are really important considerations. But because we are following the Stevenson charge to draw VRA required districts first before turning to Stevenson required groupings of counties, there are four new county splits: Wilson, Greene, Lenore, and Pasquotank. And as I said, we don't have any additional VTDs in this particular amendment. No split VTDs in these impacted counties. Okay, and I'll just say, just to kind of summarize, because I know that was a lot of background information. We have racially polarized voting in North Carolina, in parts of North Carolina. We have an obligation to draw districts that protect African-American voters' rights in those parts when you can do so reasonably. Today you have before you three such reasonable districts, districts that can be drawn naturally. The amendment does not split VTDs. The areas we were talking about, there is one less VTD split, and as I said, less municipal split and more compactness. And while the Stevenson County requirements come after the VRA compliance, the amendment keeps the whole county provision in mind with only those four additional counties that were split. So as I said, I think if we don't act on this, we're looking at some more litigation. And we know that the Supreme Court just said this was important in, as recently as June. So I would appreciate your support. Thank you.
Gentleman from Chatham, Representative Reeves, is recognized to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And Representative Harris has done a great job of explaining what the amendment does. I won't go back through that and explaining why she feels it's necessary. What I'd like to get into at this point is a little bit more about the history, because what I have noted even recently is not just, I think we all presume, even within the chamber, that everybody understands what this is about, and why it's important. And I understand more than anybody the temptation to do things that help you to hold on to power. And I mean that sincerely, because that is not something that anybody lets go of lightly. That is something that you've seen throughout history. You've seen throughout the history of this country. You've seen throughout the history of the world. I get that. And I understand that is a big lift, especially when you have to hear it from those who aren't in power, to say, this is a reason that you should do this because the people who are not in power matter. I am going to reemphasize, people who are not in power matter, period. I feel that all the way down to the smallest precinct level. I feel that all the way down to the smallest towns, the smallest municipalities, that those who are not in power's voices are just as important, sometimes more important than those that are in power. And so when I make the argument for you to support this, the reason I'm giving you this history upcoming is because that is a sincere belief that I have and will always have, no matter who is in power. I want to be able to talk about one thing in particular. Gerrymander has become a charged word. And what's odd to me from a legal standpoint is that we're having an argument about gerrymandering, because a gerrymander is simply when we manipulate the boundaries of an electoral constituency so as to favor one party or class. That's it. And so what a gerrymander is if I do anything that tends to allow a particular group to have more power than another group, then that is a gerrymander. And I'm not saying to you that that's a bad thing, and I don't think the courts have said gerrymandering in and of itself is illegal. What the courts have said are that excessive partisan gerrymandering is problematic. So Where I would respectfully disagree with arguments that have been made already and some of the arguments I've heard in committee is whether or not we're looking at a gerrymandered map. Of course we're looking at a gerrymandered map. And in describing the maps, we say where these maps have been drawn to draw Republican districts where possible without double bunking. If you are trying to draw Republican districts, then you are manipulating lines in order to achieve a result for a particular group. Now, with that being said, there then becomes the argument that I heard one of our former colleagues say is that this colleague said, I sincerely believe that this state is better off if we have more Republicans in office and Republicans are making these decisions. But again, if that's what you feel and you manipulate the maps to get there, that is a gerrymander. So I want to get that out of the way, and so understand that when I say gerrymandering, I'm not saying it accusatorily, that's what it is. Then that gets us to why do we need this amendment? I sincerely read the Stevenson decision and sincerely read the decisions by the United States Supreme Court to say that because of the history that we have in this country and in certain states, that the very first thing that must be drawn, in federal law, Trump state law, the very first thing we must focus on is allowing minority voters to be able to elect the candidate of their choice. That does not mean minority voters need to be in a majority minority district. That does not mean minority voters need to be able to, without question, vote in, for instance, if you're talking about black minorities, to vote a black candidate in. That is not what it's saying. They need to have the ability to affect the election in such a way that they can choose people who represent their choices. And what I can tell you is that I can definitely speak for me, and I can speak for a lot of districts we've seen historically in North Carolina. Nobody has ever said that means we need to have more black members, because I've had that, heard that argument in the 10 years since I've been here. It's like, well, you've got more black members. That's not what that's saying. So that is why we feel we need these new districts. Recently, Chief Justice Roberts wrote in the Milligan case that Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act protects minority voters from discriminatory redistricting. He said, quote, a district is not equally open when minority voters face block voting along racial lines arising against the backdrop of substantial racial discrimination within the state that renders a minority vote unequal to a non-minority vote. Each of the three areas where we create new districts has a long history of black representation. Before last election, each of these areas had a black representative who was either defeated or forced not to run because of the new lines. In each case, the new lines saw the African American voting age population drop significantly during the 2021 redraw and in HB 898 before today. But to get a full sense of how things have changed, we need to look even further back in our history. We believe in putting this amendment forward that there is racially polarized voting in many parts east of I-95. And right now there are only two seats in these areas where black voters have had the opportunity to elect the candidates of their choice. In comparison, in 2010, there were seven such seats. So we've gone from seven to two in a single decade. Of the 10 counties in eastern North Carolina that have the highest African American population percentages, five are in white majority districts where racially polarized voting clearly exists. Just to name one example, looking at northeastern North Carolina, which has elected African American representation since at least the 1990s. And it may be farther than that. That is far back as we went to look. Many of you remember Howard Hunter III, who was just here last cycle. Before him, it was Annie Mobley. And before her, it was Howard Hunter Jr. And some will make the argument, as we've heard today, that this is because of population changes, but the African-American share of the population in Hertford County in the 2020 census is the exact same as it was in the 2010 census. Other counties we're addressing in the amendment, like Lenoir, Nash, and Washington, have larger black percentages now than they did in 2010 census. Population changes do not explain what is happening. That means that gerrymandering is what's going on. I'm not a political or social scientist, and don't pretend to be, but here's some other data that stuck out to me personally. Lenoir County has a white voting age population percentage of 51.5%. In the 2020 presidential election, former President Trump received 51.4% of the vote in that county. Hertford County has a white voting age population percentage of 32.9%. In the 2020 presidential election, former President Trump received 32.7% of the vote in that county. Wilson County has a white voting age population percentage of 49.1%. In the 2020 presidential election, former President Trump received 48.1% of the vote in that county. Nash County has a white voting age population percentage of 51.6%, and in the 2020 presidential election, former President Trump received 49.4% of the vote in that county. I think that looks like racially polarized voting, and this amendment addresses districts in each of those areas. So let me close by saying, in 2005, there were 17 African Americans elected to North Carolina House. Five came from the counties we're talking about today. 2 decades later, there are 26 African Americans elected that were elected in 2022, but only two of are from these eastern North Carolina counties. So that's an increase of 9 statewide, but a decrease of 3 in the areas addressed by this amendment. The state's getting more diverse. That's a great thing. We have African Americans winning races today in places where that have few black voters, but we're still able to win those races. That's a great thing. But in the areas of eastern North Carolina where racially polarized voting is clearly pervasive, our refusal to follow the Voting Rights Act and our refusal to follow the Stevenson decision and our refusal to follow the U.S. Supreme Court is only going to move us backward. If we're drawing partisan gerrymandered maps, then in reality we are drawing racially gerrymandered maps, which we know is in violation of both constitutions. And that is why we need this amendment, and I would ask you to support it.
Gentleman from Caldwell, Representative Hall, is recognized to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, I would respectfully ask you to oppose the amendment. As I think was said a moment ago, the amendment draws several districts that break the county groupings that are required by the Stevenson versus Bartlett North Carolina Supreme Court case. And furthermore, it does so without any evidence of legally sufficient racially polarized voting necessary to justify the drawing of a VRA district. And thus, for us to pass this amendment, which amends the entire map, would make some or all of it unconstitutional, so I would ask you to vote no on the amendment.
For all purposes, from Guilford, Representative Harrison Rice.
To ask Representative Hall a question.
Representative Hall, is the gentleman yield?
I yield.
He yields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You mentioned that there's no evidence of racially polarized voting, and I'm just wondering, when did the state conduct the most recent racially polarized voting analysis, and who conducted it?
Thank you for the question. So in case after case and litigation in this state for redistricting, especially in the recent past, none of the parties have been able to put forth any evidence of legally sufficient or racially polarized voting. In the letter that the lady mentioned earlier from the Southern Coalition for Social Justice, they don't even mention the state house at all, and they say it's because they haven't had time. The problem with that is the census data has been out for over 2 years now. You don't need the proposed maps before you to do the analysis that they allegedly have done. You just have to have the census data. Even the group that obviously wants to show that that kind of evidence exists cannot do so for the state house. And so to answer your question, every study that I'm aware of, every study that I have seen in recent litigation, again, indicates that there is no evidence of legally sufficient racially polarized voting in North Carolina.
Mr. Speaker, may I speak to the amendment a second time?
Lady asked for to debate the amendment a second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate that, Representative Hall, and I will just have to respectfully disagree. I think the letter that we received on October 22nd shows quite clearly the kind of racially polarized, and I cited it just 10 minutes ago on the floor, cites quite clearly what kind of racially polarized voting we have going on in northeastern North Carolina, and this amendment was meant to impact that. I didn't have time to do a ton of research, but I can't find the state's most recently polarized voting analysis
analysis that is sufficient. And I know they've been presented in some of the past litigation in terms of plaintiffs who have presented good analysis, foundational analyses that show racially polarized voting, and Representative Reeves just went through a recitation of what's been happening. So I respectfully disagree with Representative Hall and urge you to support the amendment. Thank you.
Further discussion or debate? If not, the question before the House is the adoption of Amendment A1 set forward by Representative Harrison. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed to vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 44 having voted in the affirmative and 63 in the negative. The amendment is not adopted. Representative Harrison is recognized to send forth Amendment ATU 41. Clerk will read.
Representative Harrison moves to amend the bill.
Lay from Guilford, Representative Harrison has the floor to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This amendment is quite similar to the one that you just voted on. The only difference is that it splits one VTD in Lenore and I believe keeps Green County whole. And to Representative Hall's point about complying with Stevenson, I actually feel like this amendment does a better job of complying with Stevenson because it meets the requirement that we draw the VRA districts first, and then we draw the non-VRA districts. So what happens with county clusters and splitting counties is a result of compliance with the VRA districts, which is required by federal and state law and case law. Thank you very much. I would appreciate your support.
Gentleman from Caldwell, Representative Hall, recognized to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, again, I would respectfully ask you to oppose the amendment that's before you today. I've spoken, of course, to Representative Harrison, and pursuant to her debate on the floor on the prior amendment, she's considered racial data in the preparation of that prior amendment, and I believe one other that will be forthcoming. As such, we can't be sure, of course, that racial data is not in this particular amendment for Guilford County, and yes, one of our goals.
For what purpose of lay from
if this is the Guilford County amendment, I'd like to withdraw that. I'm sorry.
Just a moment. Looks like the amendment that we called forward is the ATU 41. Is that the amendment that the lady is wanting to be heard or no?
I'm sorry, I was having some trouble with my laptop. I do not want to run the amendment that was going to affect Guilford County only.
So the lady wants to withdraw this amendment, is that
please,
correct?
Please, please.
So the amendment will be returned to Representative Harrison. Representative Harrison, would the lady like to take up the, I'm prepared to call the next amendment that the lady has filed. Would you like that one heard, ma'am?
Please.
Representative Harrison is recognized to send forth Amendment ACL 42. Clerk will read.
Representative Harrison moves to amend the bill.
Lady has the floor to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen of the House, the debate that I just offered on the previous amendment is the debate that was intended for this amendment. I won't bore you with a repetition. Thank you. I would appreciate your support.
That was a great speech. Jennifer Caldwell, Representative Hall, is recognized to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, members, I would just respectfully ask you to oppose the amendment. It breaks the county groupings, which is a violation of Stevenson versus Bartlett. Furthermore, it does so without any evidence of legally sufficient racially polarized voting, which would be necessary to justify the drawing of a VRA district. Therefore, I'd ask you to vote no on the amendment.
Further discussion, debate? If not, the question before the House, the adoption of Amendment A5, sent forward by Representative Harrison. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed to vote no. Clerk will open the vote. Representative Liu wish to vote. Representative Pickett on the floor, off the floor. Clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 45 having voted in the affirmative, 61 in the negative. The amendment is not adopted. It appears that we have resolved all of the pending amendments. Is there any further discussion, debate on the bill itself? Gentleman from Guilford, Representative Quick, recognize the debate's bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wasn't going to say anything, but my friend, Mr. Rules Chair, made an argument earlier that compared election results to number of counties won by Democrats. And while that may have been an apples-to-apples comparison, it was not a Granny Smith-to-Granny Smith comparison. Because if you look at the population of North Carolina counties, you will find that 52% of our citizens live in the 15 largest counties in the state. And in those counties, particularly in the top 10, which make up 43% of our state's population, Democrats do quite well. And I would argue that without extreme partisan gerrymandering, Democrats would do quite well across the state. Please vote no on this bill.
Gentleman from Wake, Representative Johns, recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Remember, 7 years ago when I first came to this NC House of Representatives, I, like many of you, had a certain vision of how the legislative process would work, grounded, I guess, pretty much in what I retained from my high school civics class. And on the surface, that image somewhat survives. Introduction of bills, committee hearings, generally a routing through rules, and a House floor vote. But in reality, when you strip away that veneer, especially on major bills like recently the budget and now redistricting, the process markedly differs from the image. First, a small cabal of majority party legislators works together in hiding behind closed doors in absolute secret, insulated on redistricting even from public records laws, perhaps bringing in hired gun consultants. And that cabal works week after week, even month upon month, to draft and vet the bill in exquisite detail, provision upon provision upon provision. The voting public, minority party legislators, and even if what I'm told is the case, the bulk of majority party legislators are entirely excluded from the process, which finally results in a carefully drawn, detailed bill with limited time to consider and with amendments either allowed or not, or carefully scrutinized and rejected outright or voted down if perceived as unfavorable by the controlling cabal. Now, I've heard the retort, but that's the way your crowd did it 15, 20 years ago. Well, if so, it first of all may or may not have been my crowd 15, 20 years ago, but it certainly was not me. And more significantly, as my mom so many times explained to me when I protested that others were guilty of the same transgression as I, two wrongs do not make a right. And yes, very recently on redistricting, apparently after months or certainly weeks of secret drafting sessions, a minimal three limited opportunities for comment were afforded members of the public who were required to speak in generalities without seeing any proposed bill to address specifics. Now, colleagues, I don't know how many of you attended one or more of these hearings. I listened to two, and I personally attended the one here in Raleigh, where I heard speakers ranging from a 17-year-old Western North Carolina high school student to an 87-year-old resident of the Triangle. And I was intensely struck by the obvious faith of the speakers that their comments would actually be considered, and in their continuing earnest belief in the process which was so belatedly receiving those comments. Many of the speakers called for a truly impartial, independent, nonpartisan redistricting commission, which is my personal preference, but all earnestly explained, some with voices breaking and even tears, they understood the complexity of the task and indicated they could and would live with whatever results as long as reached in good faith and in a fair, transparent, open, and nonpartisan or bipartisan manner. Unfortunately, House Bill 898 reflects none of these things. And therefore, notwithstanding, frankly, that my district has drawn in the bill is likely more favorable than before because of the glaring deficiencies in process that I've mentioned and others, I'll be voting no and respectfully recommend to you to do the same. And I thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Way from New Hanover, Representative Butler, recognize debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Yes, ma'am.
As I review this proposed map, it is clear that those of us in this body cannot agree that manipulating the vote of our citizens is a bad thing. We cannot agree that diluting the vote of some voters is wrong, and we don't agree that putting partisan power over the integrity of the vote is damaging our fundamental American values. And accordingly, as my grandfather said, y'all, we are in a heap of trouble. With these maps, Republicans are trying to rig the 2024 elections by taking the 10 closest races in the 2022 election and moving each and every one of them an average of almost 5 percentage points toward a Republican advantage. If the voters in 2022 had been voting under this map, the number of districts won by Joe Biden falls from 58 to 49. The number of districts won by Sherry Beasley falls from 54 to 47. The number of districts run by Roy Cooper falls from 64 to 55. That is such a coincidence. How in the world do we think that North Carolina politicians should be allowed to hire a secret map-making consultant from Ohio on the taxpayer dime and request the lines be drawn in such a way to achieve such damaging and un-American principles? This map has nothing to do about where people live. It has nothing to do with the values and the will of North Carolina's citizens. It has everything to do with politicians placing the lines to manipulate and preordain the outcome of elections. That's obvious by how Republicans are dividing up communities across North Carolina. Let's look at the unnatural shapes. HD 116 in Buncombe County, HD 59 in Guilford, 105 in Mecklenburg, 39 and 35 in Wake County, 9 in Pitt County, 63 in Alamance, and all of Cabarrus. Each of these unnatural shapes has a purpose: to draw a Republican district where it does not naturally occur. We all say, we hear it all the time, you often say that Democrats need to do a better job of winning votes in rural North Carolina, and that's partially true, but it's also true that you need to do a better job of winning votes in urban counties. You are struggling in those areas. But rather than moderating in any way at all to appeal to young voters, instead you just rig the lines. Really, the best way to recognize unnatural districts is the eye test. But the proof is also in the compactness scores, and this gets into the weeds. But the statewide compactness scores fall under both established forms of analyses, those being the Polsby-Popper test and the REOC test. In the 22 map, the Polsby-Popper score was 0.46 and the REOC 0.38. Under this new map, the Polsby-Popper score falls to 0.43 and the REOC falls to 0.35, meaning that they are less compact. Just looking at the map we have in front of us tells the story pretty well, but you can dig deeper and see how you are dividing communities to rig the elections for the benefit of Republicans. So let's look at those split municipalities. There are 30% more of them in this map than the one we passed in 2022. In this map, there are 65 municipal splits, many of which could have been avoided. This means that the district lines divide a municipality into two or more districts, not because of some weird satellite annexation or some crazy municipal boundaries, but rather for a specific purpose. In the 22 map, there were 51 such splits. This map, again, 65. But each of those splits tells a story with a common theme, and that story is dividing a community to help a Republican politician. That's the story. So let's tell a few of these stories. Do we want to help the Republican candidate in an HD 37 in Wake County? Well, if we do, let's just split Fuquay Varina. That was not split in 2022. Do we want to help the Republican candidate in 32 in Vance and Granville? Well, then let's just split Henderson. That was not split in 2022. How about if we want to help the Republican candidate in 35? Let's just split Wake County, the towns of Wake Forest and Rollsville. Neither of those were split in 2022. Do we want to help out the Republican candidate in 105? Well, let's just split the Mecklenburg parts of Matthews and Mint Hill. Neither of those split in 2022. And so, since we cannot agree that manipulating the vote of the citizens is a bad thing, since we cannot agree that diluting the vote of some voters is wrong, and since we don't agree that putting partisan power over the integrity of the vote is damaging to our fundamental American values, I can say unequivocally that with the passage of this grotesque map, the voters are the ones in North Carolina who are, in fact, in a big, fat heap of trouble, because many of them have no statistical chance of electing someone of their choosing. That's un-American in every way, and so is this map.
Gentleman from Buncombe, Representative Rodow, recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, when we talk about the work we do here in the North Carolina General Assembly, we are often proud about how we're less polarized than the United States Congress, which is a pretty low bar right now, but stay with me. We say that about 90% of the bills that we pass by unanimous vote. In our floor speeches, we talk about the importance of bipartisanship and valuing bipartisanship in the process. Now, I stand to speak against these maps because they're going to push us away from that bipartisanship. They are going to push us more towards polarization, and that's not what the people of North Carolina want. Now, the process of partisan gerrymandering is all about stacking the deck for the home team, which it certainly is here. You pack folks into a blue district so that you make another district more competitive. So let's talk about Buncombe. My district went from 63% to 78% Democrats. Now, this sounds crazy, but I don't want more Democrats in my district. No offense to the good Democrats in Buncombe County, but I like the folks out in Sandy Mush and Lester, my Republican friends out in Lester out there. And those folks added important value, and they added important conversations, and they increased my desire to do bipartisan work. Now, these maps make it so the elections are going to be decided in the primaries. Red districts get redder, blue districts get bluer, and we are all beholden to our most extreme supporters. Now, once my primary is done next year, my election, it is good as over, because it's an 80-20 district, and I'm going to win if I get through it. Now, once all the primaries are done next year, there will only be a few truly competitive districts that will be decided on election day. And I think most of us agree that the extremes and the folks that are most involved in the primaries are not reflective of the average North Carolinian, and they're not reflective of North Carolina. And that is not what they want. As we are seeing in Congress, the extremes lead to a stalemate, they lead to a lack of a functioning government, and guess what? That's not what the people of North Carolina want either. Now, I do a lot of canvassing in my district in the off-season, and I knock on doors not to ask for their vote, but just to check in on folks. Listen, say, you know, what do you got to tell me? Let's talk. And I don't use partisan data to do that. I just pick a neighborhood and talk to everybody in that neighborhood. Democrat, Republican, Independent. And I think the largest category, which is folks who greet me, and then they say, I got something I got to do, I'm gonna leave. And y'all all know that feeling. And those folks, they got a TV show they want to get back to. They want to get back to taking care of their kids. They're cooking dinner. They want to get back to their lives. And I'm speaking up for those folks right now. They don't want extreme and polarized politics. They don't want the elections to be decided in the primaries. A lot of those folks are too busy to vote in the primaries and are not aware of the primary process. And they're just trying to make ends meet. You know, those folks want the government to work. They want it to work for them, and they want to get about their lives. And I think we should really think about them when we're voting here. Now, I've been here for 2 years, and I've had two maps. And this is the other challenge with what we have here is I'm going to get another map. And as I'm trying as a legislator to build relationships in my community and talk to folks and make sure they know who their rep is, if that changes every 2 years, it makes it really difficult. And I don't blame folks when they say, are you my rep? Is somebody else? I don't know. It changes so many times. And what that does, it removes trust in our system and it removes relationships. And if we want bipartisanship and we want a functioning government, we as legislators need those relationships. And we need those people to know who we are. And when it changes so much, it makes it extremely difficult. So I hope you'll vote against this bill and against these maps for those folks, because they don't want more extreme polarization, and they want more bipartisanship, and these maps do not do that. Thank you.
The gentleman from Wake, Representative Jones, is recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Sir.
I started not to speak on this part of the considerations we're going to have to do over the next several days on maps, because I'm saving most of my powder for the Senate and the Congress stuff. But I thought I'd better speak because this kind of points out the weakness in the process. Now, I've watched the legislature from outside for most of my political career, and that's a pretty long career. Most of the time I was on the bench, and I couldn't talk about politics from the bench or on the bench. But I watched it rather carefully. And I used to work for a man, God rest his soul, who was in the Gang of Eight in this body. And he was a very smart man, very powerful over here. And I know the gang, so-called Gang of Eight ran the place, they say, for a long time. And didn't treat, according to some, the Republicans very well. So I'm very keenly aware of all of that. So what I'm going to say about the House maps is this. If we always do what we always done, we always get what we always got. So the Republicans waited for a long time to get in control over here. 40 years the Democratic Party had it. In many instances, abused it. You all have gotten your chance. And the principal thing to do would be to rise above the fray and let's do something different that doesn't appeal to just pure, plain, unadulterated politics. Let's grab as much as we can get while we're at the table. And I don't believe that individually most of you on the other side of the aisle think like that. I know many of you. I don't think that's how you think. You're not even on the committee that wrote the stuff up. But what I'm appealing to is let's do something different. Now, I sat in that committee and I listened to those 50-some speakers speak, and four or five of them mentioned something that a lot of people on the outside of this body give kudos to. So that's what we really should do. That impartial, nonpartisan redistricting committee. That's what we should be doing. Setting that thing up. So next time this is done, we won't be doing what we're about to do right now. So basically when we get the power, we draw it as extremely as we can for our side. And when you get the power, you draw it extremely as you can for your side. What a pitiful thing that is. It's sad. And I don't even think it's a majority of the guys sitting over there and guys and women sitting over there. It's just a small group within a group. And it doesn't make sense. You know what the definition of principle is? Principle is when you apply the right thing even when it hurts. That's principle. Unprincipled is when we do what's about to be done right now. And that's sad. Now, this guy, Mr. Sengretti, or whatever his name is, I don't even know his, how do we, Swingetti. I never seen him. I never met him. I asked, could they bring him in and just have a see him on the, I'm on the redistricting committee. Can we at least see this guy? Who is he? I'd like to talk to him. I'd like to know what he weighed. Was he brought in? No. I doubt most of y'all have seen him. Who is he? He's from Ohio. He's not even from around here. What does he know about North Carolina? Something he read. We could get a North Carolinian. I'm sure we got some pretty smart people to draw this stuff up. We don't need this guy. That's who drew this up. Does that make sense? No. Is that necessary? No. Is that doing it always in the way we always did it? Yes. What a shame. Now, I may not be here when they do it next time, but I promise you one thing. As long as I'm here, I'll be pushing for that nonpartisan redistricting committee, because that's the right thing to do. Not this. And this is even the worst set of maps. This is mild compared to what they're going to do to the Congress and the Senate. This is the least. And yet, it's about to go on through. Does it make sense? No. Is it right? No. Is it partisan advantage? Yes. And I believe one day, maybe a different generation may change it. I hope to goodness they do. Now, last thing on this. You know, we take a lot of important votes up here, most of which we agree on, actually. And I've been really blessed to be here and see it happen. I wish that we would apply principle to this line drawing stuff that we apply in so many other things. Men and women of principle are in this body. I know a lot of you. And I wish the partisanship didn't just come in and cut right into this thing like it's doing. Because we don't do that on the other stuff. We vote on Medicaid expansion. We vote on all kinds of important, significant issues. And we apply principle. Which means when you apply the principle, sometimes you get a little stung, but the principle is more important. But on this thing, we all think wink, wink, blink, blink. We just got to go back to partisanship. I wish you we had another day. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Buncombe, Representative Ager, seek recognition?
Speak on the bill, Mr. Speaker.
The gentleman is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I like to keep it fairly simple. It's pretty clear the only reason we're here today is to make it easier for the majority party to maintain their majority. Otherwise, we'd just stick with the maps we had, which, you know, looking up at the reds and the greens here for the last 10 months, worked out all right for you all. There's really no reason to change, but I'd like to talk a little bit about what some outsiders have said. The Princeton Gerrymandering Project has not rated the North Carolina House map yet, but it rated both the congressional maps that are floating around and will soon be before us, both rated as an F. No doubt HB 898 will get an F as well. Our 2022 map, passed on a bipartisan vote in this House, got an A. That was a good map. You guys did all right. There has not been a lot of time to do statistical analysis on these maps, but two experts from Duke University, Professors Jonathan Mattingly and Greg Hirschlegg, have published an analysis showing how flawed and unfair these maps are. Here's what they have to say. One of the basic principles of a functioning democracy is that when the electorate changes its political opinion, this change should be reflected in the election's outcome. We find that the proposed plans are even more extreme than the originally enacted 2021 maps and are less responsive to changes in the votes. Basically, the political scientists are telling us that we're passing a rigged map, a map that is designed to generate victories for Republican politicians no matter what the voters want. It will take voters going for the Democrats in a tidal wave election to put Democrats in a position to pass the policy goals the people are asking for. Voters choosing our side is not enough. These maps require voters to overwhelmingly vote for Democrats if they ever hope benefit from Democratic policies. Last election, a majority of voters voted for Republicans, and voters received a Republican majority. Next election, if a majority of the voters vote for Democrats, the voters will still get a Republican majority, even possibly a Republican supermajority. That's not what free and fair elections look like. That is not what representative government is supposed to look like. The Duke University analysis looked at 100,000 maps randomly generated. For the 2020 presidential race, the most common maps would have favored the Democratic candidate in 57 out of 120 seats. HB 698 would favor the Democrat in 50 out of 120. That shows the effect of gerrymandering. The maps are 7 seats worse for Democrats than what you would typically expect to see absent gerrymandering. HB 698 is worse for Democrats than all of the 100,000 generated maps. That's crazy. A little bit about transparency and process as well. Redistricting records are no longer public, thanks to the 2023 budget bill. This map was drawn entirely in secret by an Ohio consultant, as my colleagues have pointed out, with taxpayer dollars. Republican House politicians were the only people that he was allowed to consult with when drawing the maps. None of us had any opportunity to consult, despite the fact that it's taxpayer dollars. These maps are very similar to the maps enacted in 2021 and thrown out initially by the North Carolina Supreme Court. Yet they were not revealed to the public until late October, nearly a year away from the general election. Passing these maps so late gives citizens very little time to identify the new districts and make decisions on running. It appears to be a deliberate attempt to give citizens very little time to familiarize themselves with the new districts and make plans to run for election. There's been no meaningful opportunity for public feedback or comment on these maps. The maps we used in 2022 were passed with a bipartisan vote. They are 100% legal. When we passed the maps, we even included language in the law that says the map will be used in 2022 and periodically thereafter. Yet here we are passing new maps in an attempt to lock in a Republican supermajority. The North Carolina Constitution states that when established, the representative districts and the apportionment of representatives shall remain unaltered until the return of another decennial census of population taken by order of Congress. Now, I'm not a lawyer. That's not who I am. But I understand that there's been a lot of legal jujitsu that says, hey, we're fine to do this. But I think people are going to see through that. Certainly when I attended the redistricting committee meeting in Hickory, not one person spoke in favor of partisan gerrymandering out of almost 100 people. Not one. Finally, I did spend a bit of my life serving in the military. What I loved about it was the opportunity to work with so many idealistic young Americans of every political stripe who served because they believed in the democratic ideals of our great country. I can promise you that when they think about what those ideals are, they didn't have this in mind. They had a free and fair elections in mind. So in honor of them, I urge my colleagues to vote no.
For what purpose does the member from Durham, Representative Morey, seek recognition?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just to briefly speak on the maps. And I guess
the member is recognized.
Thank you. The only question that I guess we haven't addressed is, why are we doing this? Why are we voting on House maps? There is no reason. There was no court order for the House maps to be redrawn. The prior North Carolina Democrat court did not order House maps to be drawn. The current Republican majority Supreme Court did not order House maps to be drawn. Why are we doing it? We had to do it for Congress because of a special master. A couple of Senate districts had to be redrawn, not the House. So we do get into the synonymous words redistricting and gerrymandering. And that's what we come down to, and we come down to basic fairness. I came to the Raleigh hearing. I listened to 69 people. I took notes on every single one of them. They wanted fairness. They wanted fair maps. They didn't want us to draw them because they have not been fair. The vast majority said we want an independent redistricting. We have presented those bills for the last 6 years that I've been here. This year we have a fair maps bill. Never went to hearing. But that's why we are where we are today. Voters are our constituents. We are representatives. We represent voters. But how do we represent them well if every 2 years we change who is in our district? I've been here 6 years. This is my third set of maps. No one knows. Are you still my rep? Are you not my rep? Who is my rep? We're not doing our constituents a good service by changing this and changing this. And I'll just end with our Constitution, Article 1, Section 2, sovereignty of the people. All political power is vested in, derived from the people. All government of right originates from the people, is founded upon their will only, and is instituted solely for the good of the whole. What we are doing today in drawing maps with partisan gerrymandering, picking our voters to entrench power, is violating the good of the whole.
For what purpose does the member from Guilford, Representative Harrison, seek recognition?
To briefly debate the bill.
The gentlelady is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen of the House, I don't want to repeat all of the factual presentation that I made about how that we, many of us, think that this map violates the Voting Rights Amendment. I'm pretty sure that's the case, and we're probably going to engage in some more expensive litigation to add to the $15 million that taxpayers have spent. But I did want to drill down a little bit on the points that have been made by my colleagues. I was only able to attend one in person, but listened to the other two in-person hearings. And have tried to read through most of the public comments, but it's been difficult because, boy, there have been a lot. But one thing, a lot has been made in the public comment record about the lack of transparency and the lack of public process, and these points have been made by my colleagues. But it bears worth repeating that we had 63 hearings across the state when we did the 2011 redraw. We had 14 in the 2021 redraw, and this time we had three public hearings in places that weren't easily accessible, in hours that weren't easily attendable, and nothing after the maps were drawn for people to speak specifically to the maps that they had before them. So there were a lot of points made about the lack of public participation and transparency. I wanted to, we sort of did an analysis of the comments. Out of 507, I'm not sure if those include today's or those that came out yesterday, out of 507, 461 specifically mentioned opposition to gerrymandering. That was 91% of the comments. There was one comment that supported gerrymandering, and I believe Representative Hall referenced that in the committee meeting last week. And then we just heard numerous comments, at least 88, that said to protect the minority voters. It's just really important that we remember that we need to be taking the public comments into account when we're drawing these maps, and it's not clear that we did, because they didn't have a specific chance to comment on how the maps look. As to the gerrymandering point that's been made by multiple people in this chamber today, I just wanted to drill down a little bit more on that. So just to let you know how what the outcome of this would be, the GOP can expect to continue to win supermajorities even when Democrats win more than 50% of the vote statewide. That's supermajorities. The GOP can maintain a supermajority by winning just 48% of the vote statewide. Democrats need 54% to win just a simple majority. That really does sound like some gerrymandering rigging. We know the public can't abide it. I wish we could take that into account. I wish we had had more transparent process. I wish we had had more public participation. It is what it is. I would encourage you to vote no on these maps. Thank you.
And for what purpose does the minority leader, Representative Reeves from Chatham, seek recognition?
To debate the bill.
The member's recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I don't know there's a whole lot I can add, and so I'm going to try to concentrate on points that I feel like maybe have not been touched upon enough. And I'm debating, obviously, I mean, just speaking very frankly, because obviously I'm a minority leader and I need a debate. And it's even now a struggle for me to debate because honestly, I'm just tired and I'm just angry. And I'll just be honest. It's, you know, guys, I mean, we, you know, Representative Vega's already said it. You know, we put these maps together last year in good faith and made a deal. Now, I want to be real clear. We're doing this because we can. There's nothing that requires us to draw these maps right now. Right now, the Senate could be doing all of this, and the only thing we'd have to vote on is a Senate congressional map. So we're doing this because we can. That in and of itself, to me, says why we're doing this. And I'm not going to talk to you about fairness because I wish to goodness that that would appeal to people. And I don't mean just in this chamber. I'm not denigrating anybody here, but I mean even the voters. This is not a sexy issue to people, but I understand what Congress sitting for the last 3.5 weeks without a speaker really means to working people. And I'll be honest with you, that's why I'm a little frustrated about some of the rhetoric I've heard today about, well, the reason you're not in power and doing this because people don't like Democrats. You got bad ideas. I'm older than some of the folks in here. And so I understand today's parties are actually a split of the Democratic Party as it existed before 2010. This ain't a situation where we're sitting here like with people who were lifelong Republicans and then came in, and some of you were. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying the numbers changed because something happened around 2010 to make people say, yep, I'm done. Because I can't tell you how many of the stories I've gotten since I've been up here. Well, I was a Democrat, and then this happened. I was a Democrat, but then, you know, I had to talk to Amos quick, and Amos did something, made me mad, and so I stopped being a Democrat. And honestly, that's how 80% of us end up where we are once we get past 40. We're somewhere between 0 and 30 because of what our parents did, because of our communities and stuff. But then as you get older, it does become about experiences with different groups of people. And a lot of people got frustrated and ticked off with Democrats around 2010 and switched parties. That is what provides a lot of what you're seeing today. So let's not mistake that suddenly there was some embracing of some policy or ideals because, again, a lot of the stories I've heard are just getting ticked off with somebody and switching parties. Or the only way I can get elected down my county is to switch parties. And that's fine. But let's not pretend it's something else. So that gets us to where we are on the maps. You don't have a speaker in Congress because state legislatures in 2010 were taken over and taken away from working people. Because a couple of billionaires got together and decided, yeah, all this stuff that's going on with health insurance for people and all these workers' rights and stuff, that's got to stop. And so they started buying state legislatures all over, not North Carolina's, but I'm just saying generally. And there's been an attack on working people since that time. A lot of people want to make it about race. A lot of people want to make it about different groups. It's not that. It's about empowering working people, which is why this country is the greatest country on earth. That's why this democracy is the greatest democracy that has ever been created. Because a working person, no matter where they came from, no matter what they look like, no matter who they prayed to or whether they did pray or not, could be anything they wanted to be in this country. And we are stealing that opportunity from those people by everything we do in this building. That is what this is about. So do I think we should create more VRA districts? Yes. But not because I think we need more black empowerment, not because we need more brown empowerment, because we need to empower people who do not have a voice in this building. Because the best ideas that have ever come in this country have come from people who had a need, not from people who had. The greatest advancements in this world came from people who had a need, not from those who had. And so when we sit up from our perches on high and look down at folks who don't have a voice, I do get frustrated. Because those people made this country. People who sweated, who broke rocks, who dug ditches, who did all of the work in war. When we had leaders who did not have to go to war, who did not have to serve in our armed forces, and people went and fought. The stories I have seen about African Americans in 1910 going into the army and then going into World War I eventually, and those people coming back to a country where they still didn't have rights, those are the people that built this country and the bonds that they built. You know, when we do the World War II memorials and we still have the veterans come here, the best thing I see is looking right up there where they always sit. And they're not looking at each other like, well, man, is this a black guy or is this a white guy or is this a poor person or did they come from my country club? They are looking at their brothers and their sisters who saved this country. Why am I talking all of this? And I appreciate not being told that it's not germane. It's because it all starts with representation. And to try to pretend that we are not stealing people's voice is being disingenuous. So if you vote today for these maps because you want to stay in power, that's fine. But tell people that's what we're doing. Don't tell people that we're doing this because this is how it's working out. Because here's the thing, and I'm being frank. You take redistricting, you take the money out of politics, and you got a representative government. It's just that simple. But right now, if you're a billionaire in this country, and especially in a state, you can walk in and you can change an entire state just with your pocketbook, and that's bad. Because when I hear about messages, I remember, and I'm not going to call on anybody in particular, but I had a good friend in your caucus who I did a bill with to help people who couldn't afford to keep coming up here. And I saw six mailers telling me how I was trying to line my pockets for my 50 cent a mile of gas money. But there were five mailers. You know how you get five mailers to do that? Because you got some billionaire sitting there saying, oh, I'll give you that money to make that lie up. And there's not a person in this building that thinks that's why that bill was proposed. Not one. I heard people telling folks that people were trying to defund organizations who had never said that. That happened because of money. So that's not about superior ideas. That's about somebody having the money to tell a lie and keep telling that lie until people believed it. And that's where we've gotten to. I feel good that most of the people in this building, if you take labels away, if you take away the money, you take away all that stuff, would still be in this building because I believe you're good people with good ideas. We ain't got to agree about everything. But we've got to agree that what matters is that working people get to talk to people like us and we truly be a representative government. And this doesn't give us representative government, period. So again, if you believe in this democracy and representative government, there's no issue about what you need to do. And that's not because I'm right, you're wrong, anything of that sort. It's because we need to set an example of a process that is inclusive for people. Because when I look around the world at all the unrest is coming in places where people feel like they no longer have a voice, where they can't vote people into office to represent them, where they can't go to the courts and get people to represent them, where they cannot go places, they cannot go anywhere to get justice. When their goal in life is not to take from people, not to be given anything, their one goal in life is just to take care of their families and be left the heck alone. It amazes me when I hear people say, well, there's nobody that could draw fair because everything's political. You think back 20 years ago, you tell me that we're where we are now. You honestly look in your heart and you tell me how many times 20 years ago you were sitting around and somebody defined their entire character by the party they were aligned with. Suddenly, because of party, we know what people feel about protections, homes, religion, and everything else. I've heard people sit there and tell me, because I'm a Democrat, about how I feel about religion as I sit beside a pastor, as I sit with other pastors, as I sit with people who spend all their days dedicated to their God. That's ridiculous. I would never judge anybody based on their party affiliation. I judge you based on the relationships I've developed with all of you all these years. And you're good, good people caught up in a tough system. We all are. But that system doesn't fix itself. We gotta fix it. So the only reason I'm asking you to vote no is because some point somebody's gotta fix it. At some point, if you want a better life for your kids, somebody's gotta fix it. Even if you're on top, do you want your kids being hated by groups of people that don't even know them because of what they perceive happens to people who are in power and not in power? Fix this. Just make it better for folks, because guys, our time is up. I hope all of us live another 50 years, but as we live another 50 years, we're going to be barely getting around, and we're not going to be mattering as much to anybody except our kids. But you know what you'll remember? What I remember. I remember Leo Daughtry when he was sitting there because he was a great man. I remember Mickey Michaud because he was a great man. I remember Skip Stam because he was a great man. That's what people are going to remember. They won't remember a dime you raised. They won't remember how many times you were in leadership. They will remember how good you were and how you did something that moved this state forward. And the only way we're going to move this state forward is we fix this system. And I know it's not going to happen today, unfortunately. But I hope to goodness those of you that return remember something about this discussion and make the decision that just because I can do something doesn't mean I have to do something. The greatest power we will ever show to people in this state and these voters is the power of restraint. And I hope one day we use it. Thank you.
Further discussion, debate? If not, the question before the House, passage of House Bill 898 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Clerk will open the vote. Clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 62 having voted in the affirmative, 44 in the negative. House Bill 898 passed the second reading and will be read a third time.
The General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
Any discussion or debate on third reading? Seeing none, the question for the House, passage of House Bill 898 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
In the opinion of the chair, the ayes have it. The ayes do have it. House Bill 898 having passed third reading is ordered engrossed and sent to the Senate by special messenger. Members, for your planning purposes tomorrow, a couple of other just administrative matters, no other votes today. The Senate, there was an objection. Their rules are different. In the House, there is no third reading can happen on the same day as second reading without leave of the body under Rule 41 under redistricting bills. The Senate does not have a similar rule. There was an objection to third reading, I believe, on the Senate maps. So the Senate will need to take their Senate maps up in the morning. That is going to delay us a little bit in terms of what we can do. So for planning purposes tomorrow, the admin session that we will come in for will be at 10 a.m. Members should anticipate an announcement for the redistricting and the rules committee to meet tomorrow morning as well. But we will not be having any votes until 1:30 tomorrow afternoon. What that will do is that will give the committees ample opportunity to discuss the various bills that have come over from the Senate. The gentleman from Wayne, Representative Bell, the majority leader, is recognized for an announcement.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On Republicans, we'll have a brief caucus immediately after session right downstairs in 1228. Thank you.
For what purpose, Lady from Carreras, Representative Baker Rice.
For a point of personal privilege.
Lady has four.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I rise today in full disclosure of engagement in a battle that started the very first day of long session. In January of 2023, I took my seat next to a representative whom I didn't know very well. He seemed quiet, and he seemed respectful. That is, until one day I arrived just moments after he did to take my seat, and he surprised me with a question. Where have you been? Do I need to help you with your scheduling? I expect my seatmate to be on time. So I thought, okay, that's how it's going to be. Game on. And so the competition started. And so who would be here first? Who would come to chamber and be ready to go? And who could present their bill most concisely? Key elements, few words. It comes as no surprise to anyone in this place today that I consistently lost that particular battle. And then there were the predictions. I predicted that there was no way that we would still be in long session October 15th on his birthday. He predicted otherwise, and I lost once again. And so this continued throughout session until one night right here in this chamber, as I was preparing in advance for remarks I was going to make, he surprised me with yet another question. Do you mind if I pray for you? And upon my yes, we bowed our heads right here, and he proceeded to lift me up. And so today, I want to say thank you to my seatmate, Representative Matthew Winslow. Thank you for making me laugh during our competitions and for making me brave during the battles. I hope you all will join me in wishing Representative Matthew Winslow a very happy belated birthday.
For what purpose does the lady from Wake, Representative Dahl, rise? For what purpose does the lady from Mecklenburg, Representative Logan, rise? I just saw you put your pillow or something there, I guess, on the microphone, so, all right.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Myself and Representative Green will hold the first Bipartisan Safety and Criminal Justice Caucus meeting tomorrow at 11 a.m., and room 421 of the LOB. So all members, we're asking if you can please attend the first meeting. Thank you very much.
For what purpose, John from Buncombe, Representative Ager, rise.
Mr. Speaker, having submitted a representative statement with the clerk, I ask that it be read in its entirety upon adjournment and spread across the journal, and would like to be recognized to speak to the statement.
So ordered, and the gentleman has the floor to speak to a point of personal privilege.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, 40 years ago yesterday, 241 Marines, sailors, and soldiers were killed in the bombing in Beirut, Lebanon. These servicemen were serving as part of a peacekeeping force in Lebanon and were killed in a deadly terrorist bombing on October 23, 1983. While this event these days is not often remembered, it represents the real beginning of the war on terrorism, which was the defining conflict for those of my generation who served. My father-in-law, James Walters, served in Lebanon during this period as the officer in charge of a Navy communication unit and was fortunate to fly back to Greece just 2 weeks prior to the attack. I had the opportunity to speak to him last night, and he had some funny stories about his time there, but his most important memory was of the impossibility of the security situation. They were situated between three warring factions, with the Sunnis on one side, the Shia on another, and Christians on another. Their placement in between those warring factions meant lots of shells going back and forth over their position and sometimes falling short right on top of them. The Beirut Veterans of America is a group that seeks to remember the sacrifice of the young Americans who died there. On this, the 40th anniversary of the attack that killed so many, I think it's fitting that we too remember their sacrifice. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Ager. Special message from the Senate, Corker Reed.
Special message from the Senate. The following special message is received from the Senate. Senate Bill 759, second edition, a bill to be entitled an act to establish election districts for the Watauga County Board of Commissioners, to establish residency districts for the Anson County Board of Commissioners, and to modify the primary process, the Johnson County Board of Education.
Bill is referred to the Committee on Redistricting. If favorable, rules counter, and operations of the House. For what purpose, gentleman from Caldwell, Representative Hall, rise.
One announcement.
Gentleman has the floor.
Members, I'm going to try to give you some read on the schedule today, especially if you're lucky enough to be on redistricting and rules. Today, at 4:30 p.m., which is in about 15 minutes, the House Redistricting Committee will meet. I think that notice went out some time ago, but if you've not been checking your email, when we leave here, head over. I think we're meeting in 6:43 for House Redistricting. Shaking their head, yes. So 6:43, and then 10 minutes after House Redistricting ends, we're going to do a Rules Committee meeting, and that'll be in the same room in 6:43. So we'll just set it up in there. That way you don't have to get back across between the buildings. And I, as I understand it, the a budget technical corrections bill is what we will take up at the House Rules meeting 10 minutes after redistricting. Tomorrow's schedule, as far as we know it right now, and of course we're trying to coordinate this with the Senate, we'll do House Redistricting at 11 a.m. tomorrow. Then we will do House Rules at 12 p.m. tomorrow. And then we will have session at 1:30 p.m. tomorrow. And, of course, watch your email for changes on that, depending on how the day goes. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Any further notices or announcements? And again, pursuant to the notice earlier, there will be no votes until 1:30 tomorrow afternoon. We'll advise the body. Chair's informed there are some conference reports that we will be receiving tomorrow. So members should anticipate once we come in from the admin session and when we are standing in recess until full voting session afternoon, tomorrow morning the chair is going to put the House in recess subject to the modifications to the calendar, so that way be as transparent as possible. Folks can know what bills are being added to the calendar at that point. Anything further for the body? Seeing nothing further to come for the body, the gentleman from Caldwell, Representative Hall, recognized for motion.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House do now adjourn to reconvene Wednesday, October 25th at 10 a.m., subject to the standard stipulation set forth in Rule 15.1.
Representative Hall moves, seconded by Representative Eiler, that the House do now adjourn to reconvene Wednesday, October 25th at 10 a.m., subject to the standard stipulations set forth in Rule 15.1. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The House stands adjourned.
Reading of a representative statement honoring the life and memory of Dr. Godofredo Nong, whereas Godofredo Nong, affectionately known as Fred, was born in Bac, Mandarik, Philippines. On November 10, 1937, he earned his Bachelor of Science degrees from the University of the Philippines in 1958 and his Medical Doctorate degree from the University of the Philippines Medical School in 1962. And whereas Dr. Nong and his wife Anita moved to the United States, in 1967, Dr. Nong moved to Raleigh, North Carolina to serve as an in-house surgeon at Wake Memorial Hospital, now Wake Med. In 1969, he started his own practice and later founded the Wake Surgical Center. In 1974, he also served on the staff at Raleigh Community, now Duke Raleigh, Wake Med, and Rex Hospitals. He was first Asian to be elected as president of Wake Memorial Hospital. He retired from his surgical practice in 2003. And whereas between 1995 and 2020, Dr. Nong served as the surgical coordinator for the Carolina Medical Mission, which he co-founded along with his wife and close friends, Drs. Arturo and Rosemary DeLon, through their mission over 100,000 patients in various countries who otherwise would have had little to no access to health care, received medical care. And whereas Dr. Nong was instrumental in organizing the Filipino community in North Carolina to create the Philippine American Organization, which became a precursor to the current PAANC, Filipino American Association of NC. In these early days, Fred and his wife hosted the community in their own home and backyard. The Phil-Am organization was key to creating community and fostering social and charitable involvement. And whereas Dr. Nong was a key figure in the recruitment of many Filipino nurses and healthcare workers to the area, he was a philanthropist who supported many causes, including education, medical access, leadership, and advancement in the Filipino community. And whereas Dr. Nong died on April 17, 2023, leaving an outstanding legacy in the field of medicine and a prominent, lasting impact on North Carolina as an active member of the Philippine American community until his death. Now, therefore, it is fitting to honor the memory of Dr. Godofredo Nong to show gratitude for his selfless devotion to the treatment of others through his medical profession and the building of community. In witness whereof, the undersigned certifies that the foregoing statement was read in the House and placed upon the journal on this 24th day of October 2023, submitted by Representative Maria Cervania, attested to House Principal Clerk James White. A representative statement showing appreciation for Beirut veterans, whereas the United States of America has always been a symbol of peace and freedom and has achieved this stature throughout the world because of the selfless service of our brave veterans, from those who fought in the Revolutionary War to those currently serving in harm's way. The fearless members of our country's armed forces have given up the comforts of home, the company of loved ones, and, for some, even their own lives, to secure the blessings of liberty for many on our planet. And whereas today we honor those brave service members who served our country as peacekeepers in Lebanon between 1982 and 1984 with courage, honor, and valor, and whereas it has been 40 years since the deadly attack on U.S. forces in Beirut, Lebanon, on October 23, 1983, during which 241 U.S. Marine, Navy, and Army personnel lost their lives, representing more military service member deaths than any other day since the Tet Offensive in the Vietnam War, and more U.S. Marine deaths than in any battle since the Battle of Iwo Jima in World War II, and whereas many consider the attack to be the beginning of America's war on terror, which set the precedent for how our country's military approaches conflict in the Middle East, those who sacrificed their lives and their loved ones shall not be forgotten. And whereas this act against our country has now faded into obscurity of children's textbooks, university lectures, and most American memories, the Beirut Veterans of America have a motto: the first duty is remember. Our duty is to remember those who lost their lives and the families who have endured the last 40 years of sacrifice, separation, anguish, and loneliness to keep our world free from the tyranny of radical and religious ideologies. And whereas these men came in peace and gave the ultimate price for their freedom, their lives, now therefore today we are dedicated to honoring and recognizing the memory of those brave souls who should never be forgotten. In witness whereof, the undersigned certifies the foregoing statement was read in the House and placed upon the journal on this 24th day of October 2023, submitted by Representative Eric Ager, attested to House Principal Clerk James White. Representative Destin Hall is recognized to send forth a redistricting committee report, Senate Bill 757, Realigned Congressional Districts, 2023, CST-4, favorable and re-referred. Senate Bill 757, re-referred to the Committee on Rules. Senate Bill 759, Watauga County Board of Commissioners, LST-2, favorable and re-referred. Senate Bill 759, re-referred to the Committee on Rules. All recognized to send forth rules counter operations of the House Committee Report. Senate Bill 508, remove volunteer chaplain education requirements, favorable House Committee substitute, unfavorable original bill. Original bill placed on the unfavorable calendar, whereas House Committee substitute, Senate Bill 508, placed on tomorrow's calendar, pursuant to Rule 36B.